What is it good for? Everybody on? All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome. This is In Context. You are listening to WPKN Radio. We are live every Monday, but the first Monday of the month from noon to 1 p.m., and this is WPKN's live public affairs call-in show. And you can find out more about us at our website at incontextreport.com. And we have the YouTube channel as well, where you can find us at youtube.com/incontextreport. And you can also find us on Facebook to get continuing updates about everything that we're doing on the show, upcoming shows, show announcements, podcasts. You can keep up with us. And, you know, we're getting emails all the time from listeners out there who are finding the podcasts. And we got an email yesterday from someone from England who said that we are now on his must-listen list, and that was pretty cool. It's good to get the feedback and find out that the work's appreciated and, you know, that there's people around the world listening to it, not just here in Connecticut. My name is Gus Cantavero, and my co-host, Ken McDermott-Rowe, is actually out. Do we have him punched in now?
Yep.
Oh, Ken, say hi.
Good afternoon, Gus. I'm joining you from the beautiful campus of the University of Connecticut at Storrs.
All right. Very cool. How is it up there?
It's a little bit overcast, but otherwise it's pretty good.
All right. And so today we're going to be doing a rundown of the news, and then in the second half of the show we're going to be talking about the beating of Kelly Thomas and eventual death by the Fullerton County Police Department in California, and the outrage protests and the pending trial for the police officer who was responsible for Kelly Thomas's death. But we're going to start with a news rundown. And I actually wanted to open the show with a little bit of an anecdotal story about the impact that our news articles are having out there and sort of the state of mind that's going on. And a little later on, we are going to be opening the phone lines. But I was looking at our blog's our statistics yesterday and noticed that we had a spike in traffic from a particular website. And I followed the link in reverse and went back to it to find out how exactly they were talking about us. And it was this website called facepunch.com. And this is a website of conversations, sort of like threads, you know, a news group or whatever, a forum rather. And it's mainly for the gaming community, and so they talk about pop culture, games, you know, event. Every once in a while a news headline will pop up and they'll make some sarcastic comments about it, not taking it seriously. But they were talking about Sheriff Arpaio's cold case posse in Arizona, and the basic crux of the theme was that it was based on racism. And now, if you don't know who that is, Sheriff Arpaio has headed up the cold case posse of forensics experts in Arizona, and they looked at the Obama birth certificate file to see if there were any legitimacy to the claims that the file was a fraud. Now, 2 years ago, I did my own investigation when it was released online, the PDF file of the Obama birth certificate, and I came away with the conclusion by using my imagery expertise to show that this file was a forgery. Now, that doesn't show that the birth certificate is a forgery. It just shows that the digital file put online is a forgery, and I said that we need a better investigation as to why this file was put online. So someone actually posted our blog post from incontextreport.com to say, what do you guys think about this? And it started a firestorm debate of how the person who created this blog posting was a hoax. He was actually creating the material for the blog post and that it wasn't legitimate. So I actually created an account just to be able to post on there and say, hello, I created this, and I did not fake it. This is real. So it starts a barrage of comebacks of people just saying, no, this is fake. You don't know what you're talking about. You didn't actually do this. If this were true, the FBI and the CIA would have already done a background check. Why should you have to give any more proof? Obviously, you didn't provide enough proof on the blog. And I say, well, did you read it? You know, and no one actually read it. Instead, what they do is they just skim things and poke holes. And that
it's very
is
frustrating, Gus.
Oh, yeah.
And I must say, I'm a layperson. Gus is an expert at photography and a digitalization of images. And he explains in this article, which you can see on at incontextreport.com, in layman's terms that even I can understand, how this document has been altered.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to see this altered document in the light of the fact that the President Obama spent many years, and I'm sure a lot of money, litigating against people who wanted him to produce a birth certificate.
Yeah, and it's just really frustrating, as you said. Frustration is the word of the day. And it just shows that people don't actually look at evidence. They skim and dismiss.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, is very indicative of the gaming culture that we have in America today. Because one of the things is that when you think about it, you know, the games create these – well, first of all, they encourage kids not to think. They create a suspended disbelief, yeah. The stories are so outrageous. You know, anything out of real life that could – it be imposed in one of these games suddenly is too unrealistic.
Right.
That's something of fiction. That's something of a game.
And the person who said, and I'm not going to, you know, spend my days getting sucked into this. I said, you know, this is, I'm just going to put it out there. If you have any technical questions, I'll answer them, but I'm not going to waste my time here if you don't have any real questions. But I said, I want to address what you said about the CIA doing a background investigation of Obama. I said, this is proof that you didn't actually read what I wrote, because I cite Wayne Madsen's report, All in the Family, where he shows in detail all of the members of Obama's family who were actually working for the CIA, Obama's mother, Obama's stepfather, Satoru, Obama's two grandparents, one, the mother worked in a bank in Hawaii laundering money for the CIA, and the father who owned a front organization for the CIA. So
if people look at Wayne Madsen, if they get Google him, they'll find the CIA background of Obama's family, right?
Exactly. And it's all there. And that just proves people don't read. They're just like, no, come on, this is bunk. What is this, the Bourne ultimatum? Well, that's why those stories are out there, to discredit the actual real stories. I look at fiction as telling truth with artistic representation, but people who are so ingrained and obsessed with fiction, they can't even tell the difference between reality and what's fiction.
Well, and I find, too, that, you know, the movie environment in this day and age, the gaming environment in this day and age, really, it deadens the senses and deadens one's intelligence. I mean, the majority, and it's not to say that all people who are into movies or all people who are into games are like
right.
this, but as a whole, that's what the gaming industry is designed to do. It's designed to create an escape. Mm-hmm. So this way, kids don't actually have to think about the real world. They don't have to think about the real world's problems. And as a result, I find they don't have any patience. So they don't have the patience to actually sit there and read your article and digest it, or read any article and digest it, for that matter. They want to put 5 seconds of thought into it, and then they have to move on to Angry Birds or some
which,
stupid
which
game
is
like
just
that.
Too bad. But, you know, we're not going to spend all day talking about this. All right. So we're going to move on. I just want to run down some of the other headlines. And last week, there was a quickly fizzled story about Ron Paul dropping out of the presidential race. And it was a one-day headline. It was everywhere, and then it was nowhere, because they wanted to make sure everyone got the message but didn't spend too much time actually thinking about it. And just to show how far-reaching the hoax to say that he dropped out, because he didn't. He actually just suspended advertising campaigns and retail campaigning in the states yet to vote. But what he actually did was to continue running for president just to kind of save money and not advertise in the states remaining. And just to show you the campaign's not dead, they raised over $800,000 in this past week. All right.
And there's a big story, too, Gus, on the delegate count and the caucus states.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. And I was on, I think, GQ website the day that this was announced, and within minutes there was an article up, and the headline was "The 10 Stages of a Ron Paul Supporter's Denial," and it was taking snippets from the forum saying that, oh no, say it ain't so, you know, and then like labeling each of these things, going from anger to denial to acceptance, you know, and it was so ridiculous because that's not even what happened, but anyway.
Could one compare this to the rumor that Ron Paul was going to be Romney's VP?
I guess so. I guess. I mean, it's sort of on par with that, because both are meant to discredit him. You know,
but
Ron,
he's picking up delegates, right?
Yes.
In Maine and Minnesota and other states.
Yeah, thanks for keeping me on task here. he actually picked up 32 of 40 delegates from Minnesota, and a significant number of delegates from Virginia, Vermont. Almost all the delegates from Iowa, almost all from Maine, half from Arizona, and almost half from Oklahoma. So these are the ones that have had their county and state conventions so far, and others are still to come. Other states are even still to vote, like Texas, where Ron Paul is from, and has a very large number of delegates there.
What does that say to you, that there's this huge difference between the popular vote for Romney and the fact that the party regulars are voting for Ron Paul?
What that says to me, because of the way that these particular states operate, that they have caucuses, meaning that they put an emphasis on citizen action, so that they want the people to not just to come and vote, but to stick around and actually be a part of the process, meaning they have to elect the delegates, and they have to they themselves volunteer to go to the county conventions to make sure that the best people are elected. These caucuses were designed to keep the citizenry active in the process, whereas a primary is more about getting the uneducated voter to show up, cast a ballot, and go home, so that it's a winner-take-all state.
Because the guy with the media buy is going to usually win that.
Exactly. So that's why the system wants primary states and not caucuses, and they demonize the caucuses by using this Ron Paul phenomenon that's happened, where the delegates are actually going to Paul. They're saying this is why the caucus procedure is flawed. But in reality, this is how a motivated, active citizenry can stay involved and make sure that a fraud like Romney and Obama aren't elected.
That's right. And we, you know, people think that we pound on Obama a lot, but we don't have to carry any water for the Republicans either.
No. I mean, if anything, Ron Paul is an anti-Republican, or at least maybe an old school Republican, what the Republican Party used to stand for. And what it is now is nothing more than, you know, water carriers for the corporations and the military industrial complex. And so I guess moving on, we have another big story that happened was the J.P. Morgan Chase catastrophe, where they was reported that they lost $2 billion in terrible investments. And now that number has ballooned to between $6 and $7 billion. And this is not the first time where the public was told about a major loss or a big time cost, where it later on balloon to quadruple in that size. Remember the bailouts? It started out, it was just going to be $750 billion, and it ended up being between $14 and $20 trillion because of unfunded mandates that they had promised to help protect the banking industry from, a la the derivatives scandal.
And people don't want these bailouts. You remember, it was forced through at the end of Bush Jr.'s term.
I think it calls to Congress for 60-1 and against.
And then they threaten people, and they got it pushed through. And I mean, who's running the government? You know, at the last congressional election, we covered at WPKN. I read the list of the contributors to the two congressional candidates, our current congressman and his Republican challenger, and both of them, almost all of their top contributions came from banks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what we really need to do, I think this would work perfectly, would save us all a lot of time and a lot of brain power wasted, would be as if we just elected the board of directors of some corporation. And so we try Goldman Sachs, see how that works, let them choose the next president, and then if that doesn't work, maybe we try Microsoft or something, let Bill Gates run the country.
Or why don't we just let the corporations run for president themselves, since corporations are people?
Exactly.
So we could have Goldman Sachs run for the Democratic nomination, and we could have Boeing run for the Republican nomination, right? And then
Lockheed Martin could be VP. We could get Shell Oil as the Democratic VP. This would be perfect.
So it'd be like electing race teams or something.
Well, it seems like there's this fairly simple policy. It isn't a simple problem, but restoring the Glass-Steagall Act,
uh-huh,
which they got rid of under Clinton, which is a huge mistake. This was a bill and a law since the 1930s, which separated the commercial banks from the riskier investment banks, like your Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was repealed in the 1990s, and that allowed the commercial banks essentially to mix their money and get involved in risky investments. And when the thing collapsed, of course, everybody's money's at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be reinstituted. And we should get these banks, break them up, and separate these two functions again.
Max Kaiser, the financial analyst who I like to quote from time to time, he says that the massive loss that J.P. Morgan Chase took this last period was partly as a result of the massive amounts of naked shorts that Chase has made on the silver market. And Chase is really active in the manipulation of the precious metals markets. And keeping the price of gold and silver artificially low is one way to keep the dollar valuable, or at least the perception that the dollar is valuable. So J.P. Morgan has made a massive amount of naked shorts on on silver. And the silver market has continued to climb regardless. And for every dollar of silver removed from the market, it costs Chase Manhattan $100. So they're taking a 100-to-1 loss every time a dollar of silver is removed from the market.
I guess they're not all powerful, because I understand that some of the hedge funds decided to move against Chase, and that's why they're getting clobbered.
Yeah, and if you've heard of the Buy Silver, Crash J.P. Morgan campaign, you'll know what I'm talking about. And this is a direct result of that. And, of course, Obama has jumped on board and is using this catastrophe as a way to call for a new round of financial regulations. But, you know, I hope that the general public has caught on to the shell game that's taking place, because every time the government calls for regulations, all it does is create giant loopholes the size of the Lincoln Tunnel.
That's right. It's a real fraud. I mean, the other huge mistake other than the Glass-Steagall Act was failing to regulate the derivatives market, which also occurred under Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And now they understand they're not funding the agency that's supposed to regulate them today, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, has enough sufficient staff to regulate the business.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just totally disingenuous. These guys are continuing to merrily play with money with the insurance coming from you and me.
Yeah. These regulations are just designed to stifle the competition for the big banks and the big corporations. It has nothing to do with actually protecting the American people's exposure to really terrible investment schemes, which is really what the banking industry is. It's scheme after scheme designed around a house of cards. It's just completely ridiculous.
And, of course, we have had Ellen Brown on our show,
yes,
who's an advocate of publicly owned banks, which will eliminate a lot of these problems and make sure that we don't have these bubbles, and also make sure that capital is used to benefit the country and improve our own economy, and not just for speculative purposes.
Mm-hmm. Also going on right now is the NATO summit in Chicago. You may have heard about it. Over the weekend, there were thousands of protesters who were amassed to lead marches through the city to call for the removal of NATO, and our good friend Rick Rozoff was a featured speaker at one of the events there over the weekend, and he laid out his massive tome of evidence against NATO, showing that it's an organization that doesn't actually stand for what they claim to be for, which is peace and fairness and the end of wars. But instead, under NATO, we have an increase of wars, an increase of death, an increase of destruction, increase of weapon sales.
And of course, what happened there, Gus, was that NATO was originally, for about 40 years, a defensive alliance of Western European nations against the Russians. And when the Soviet Union collapsed, George Bush Sr. and subsequent presidents have converted it into an offensive global alliance meant to project the power of the U.S. and its allies all over the world in offensive wars. And the current so-called war on terror is actually premised on an article of the NATO treaty, the Mutual Defense Treaty of NATO.
Article 15.
Was invoked to justify our invasion of Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And over the weekend, demonstrators were, the police were already becoming very forceful with the demonstrators before the summit had even started. And the police were using horse-mounted officers to push crowds in different directions off their pre-planned marching routes. And some protesters were even arrested for allegedly possessing Molotov cocktails. But the statements given by the suspects claimed that the police themselves had actually given the Molotov cocktails to the people who were arrested.
It's a familiar story.
Very.
Outside the courtroom, one of the defense attorneys, Michael Deutsch, said, two undercover police officer or informants who called themselves Mo and Gloves were also arrested on the Wednesday during the raid. And the defense attorney said they later lost track of the two men.
Oh, of course, yeah, as they disappeared into the crowd. But they were probably actually wearing police boots, and then they just went off, took their jackets off, and had their uniforms underneath.
It's an old story.
How silly is this, though? It sounds like a 1930s crime movie. Yeah, what do you think, Mo? Should we bring them the Molotov cocktails? Yeah, sure thing, Gloves. Let's go. We'll get these guys. Yeah, we'll show them the protest.
How does it play out in the corporate media? I mean, we're discussing it, we're exposing it, but how does it play out on CNN?
Oh, then no mention.
And all you know is there were Molotov cocktails. These guys were charged with having Molotov cocktails.
And to be honest, I mean, well, first of all, I'd like to make a self-correction. It's Article 5 of the NATO treaty, not Article 15. I'm sorry. That was my bad.
All right.
But the that being said, you know, they act like these nuts. They were given, you know, they had these dangerous Molotov cocktails, and any halfwit can make a Molotov cocktail. And yeah. It's not brain
gas
surgery.
And diesel and a glass bottle and a rag.
And a rag. That's it.
We're going to talk about Kelly Thomas in a little bit, about the overall effect on people on the First Amendment rights when they're subjected to this.
Uh-huh.
The attorneys for these nine individuals reported that they were shackled at both their hands and their feet. When they finally got to see them, they'd been held incommunicado for several hours. And then when six of them were finally released, no charges were brought against them.
Just to show how
the impact of this. You go through an experience like that, and you, I'm sure, are terrified, and you're going to tell your friends.
Right. It's a chilling effect.
Well, and you know what? I mean, people think, you know, when we were doing this to the Iraqis and to the Afghans, oh, that was okay. We were just doing it to them. They were foreigners. And now we're doing it to our own people, you know. And I think it is a sign that, you know, not just what goes around comes around, but if we're willing to do it to Iraqis, they're still human beings. It doesn't take much for us to start doing it to our own people.
Yeah, not much of a stretch to go from there back home.
The powers that be don't view us as human beings. They view us as sheep. They view us
cattle.
As animals. Cattle, exactly.
Yeah, we're a kept herd. And, you know, this is an example of the overarching police state that is self-replicating itself around the globe to become the new form of government, to replace our former Republican democracy. This is, you know, the NATO thing, the protesters in Chicago, is just like the Cleveland guys who were supposedly going to try to blow up that bridge when it turns out they were given a bomb by an FBI informant who instructed them on where to do it and went with them to go do it and then, you know, forced them to do it. And then they say we're innocent in the end. And there turns out they're just a bunch of idiots anyway.
I don't think the government's produced a single case where it didn't involve agent provocateur.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think so. I think the only person who is somewhat authentic was Faisal Shahzad, the Bridgeport native who went down to Times Square. And, you know, but the thing was that he was connected to informant mosques, I think, in Yemen, I think. So he was speaking to informant, you know, what do you call those? Imams, yeah. The, CIA connected imams. So I guess even still, that's intelligence connected. But
and the fact that, I mean, clearly the guy who was doing this was not all that bright either.
No.
I mean, like I say, you know, I encourage people. Go and look up. Go to Wikipedia and type in, you know, the Irish Republican Army. Type in the Ulster Volunteer Force. Type in the Red Brigade, and it'll any terrorist organization in human history. And the methods that they have used were incredibly simple. This wasn't some guy. They didn't have some guy sneaking in with a uranium bomb. He had a fertilizer bomb in Omagh in Northern Ireland, killed dozens of people with materials you could buy at Home Depot.
Which is why what were we talking about yesterday? The odds of being killed in a terrorist attack.
Oh, yeah. What was it? Something really absurd.
It was one in 1.5 million. And then they said if there was a 9/11 size terrorist attack every year, the odds of dying in a terrorist attack are still 1 in 100,000. 1 in 100,000. So it's still incredibly slim.
More people are killed by champagne corks in the U.S. than are killed by terrorists.
Or falling
in the US.
Vending machines. Yeah, drowning in your bathtub. There are lots of ways.
Abbott and Costello based deaths.
And yet, it's 1 in 1,100 dying in a car wreck.
Yeah.
So I mean,
excuse me, guys. If people just joined us, they're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM. This is WPKN's live political talk show, call-in show, and we will be taking calls later on.
See, that's why Ken is part of the group, because he's the adult in the room. We can't function if he's not here. So moving on to the Kelly Thomas story, which is just another example of rapidly reproducing police state just running rampant around the country. Kelly Thomas is a homeless schizophrenic man, lived in Fullerton County, California, and July 5th, 2011, police responded to a call where a concerned person was reporting a man looking in car windows at a bus depot. And the police arrived and began questioning Kelly, and he had been questioned before. You know, this is sort of routine behavior for him. So his father is actually a retired police officer, and so Kelly would sometimes live with his father, sometimes go out and live on the street for months at a time. And so he's a homeless schizophrenic, and the police show up and start questioning him. And so he has some erratic behavior. And instead of actually asking what his name is or where he lives or maybe trying to get him help, say, let's get you home, they start getting rough with him. They put gloves on, and the one officer, Manuel Ramos, the reason why this we all know this is because it was caught on the camera of the bus depot, and the officer's microphone on his lapel, when combined, you could watch and see and hear what he's saying. So he says, you see these fists? And Kelly Thomas says, yeah, what about them? He says, they're getting ready to start effing you up. All right? So right away, the officer starts with a confrontational stance and attitude, whereas the peace officers, which is what police officers are supposed to try to defuse situations, not escalate them. And this, you could tell right away that this officer was looking for a confrontation. So he starts,
people could see this video right on YouTube.
Oh yeah, it was shown to the court.
Go put in Kelly Thomas and
yeah, it'll come
YouTube.
Right up.
It'll pop right up.
Yeah, it'll come right up. And so they start pushing him. And then he gets up and he takes a defensive stance where he holds his hands up to his chest and turns away. And then the officer pulls out his nightstick and starts hitting him in the knee. So then Kelly Thomas runs to the other side of the car to try to get away, because this is what's the mentality. When you're attacked by an officer, even if the officer is in the wrong, you cannot strike back, because now it's assaulting an officer. Even if the officer has gone off the rails and is absolutely crazy and starts beating you, you cannot protect yourself, because then you'd be shot.
Passive. He looks like he's a little bit out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's sitting there harmlessly, what, on a curb?
Yeah. I think he's on like a tailgate of a pickup truck something.
And let me tell you something. I mean, I, for training purposes, have been hit with a baton, a PR-24, and I was taking a criminal justice class, and to demonstrate, I got hit with an ASP. And they were really light taps, but the point was to demonstrate force.
They hurt, yeah.
And they hurt a lot. And you're hitting somebody in, especially around the knee area, you have a lot of nerves there. You can actually cause joint damage.
Oh, yeah.
And there are law enforcement diagrams which show the different zones of the body where you're, if you have to use your baton, where you're supposed to hit somebody. And, you know, hitting people in the legs, that's a tactic used for torture in third world countries.
Yes, because what you're trying to do is actually cause a blood clot, which will then send blood poisoning to your brain and kill the person.
Exactly.
Now, I'm a black belt in martial arts, and I understand you get hit, you can have a broken wrist real easily. You know, I mean, I've broken bricks with my hands, and just accidentally, you hit something with the wrong angle, you get a broken hand, you get a broken thumb, you can bust your knee, your chin, you can get hurt really easily. The human body is very fragile. It's incredibly strong when used as a weapon, but it's also incredibly fragile. And they knock Kelly Thomas to the ground, and two officers are piled on top of him. The guy looks like he's no more than 150. You know, he's a skinny guy. And he's saying, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I can't breathe. And they just keep on drop kicking him, kneeing him, elbows in the head, batons. More guys show up immediately without even asking questions, even trying to find out what he did. They just run up and start tasing him. So now he's getting repeatedly tased.
At no point do you see him doing anything which threatens the officers.
No. In fact, the only thing that happened to one officer because he fell off the dog pile was that he got his elbow scraped. And then when the paramedic shows up, you can actually see that he stops treating Kelly Thomas in order to take care of the officer's poor boo-boo on his elbow. So then they take Kelly Thomas to the... And the best part of the video is when he starts screaming for his father. All right, now
it's really heart wrenching.
Really, incredibly sad.
Hard to watch, folks, but you ought to watch it just to see what's going on in our society.
So then they knock him unconscious. They take him to the hospital where he's put on life support. 6 days later, he's taken off and he dies. Now, the officers were put on paid leave, and this is only because the father is a retired officer and he demands justice and he knows the system. If this guy was just a random poor sap out there who got beat to death, he would just disappear into the system. They would do an internal review, find out that nothing wrong was done, procedure was followed, and it was an accidental death. But because his father's a retired police officer, he's demanding justice. And a small number of people actually protested outside the police station in order to get justice for Kelly Thomas. But I want to use this as an example to show this is true police brutality. Now, Kelly Thomas is white. So there's no racism involved here. But I find it very sad when people get so wrapped up in race, a la Trayvon Martin, where people ran to jump to conclusions before even knowing what the facts of the case were. All right? The idea of focusing on race is very minuscule in comparison to what the overall problem of our society
is. It's very divisive.
It's divisive because I've said before that I don't believe in minority rights. I believe in individual rights. And if individual rights are followed, then white people and black people both have the same liberties. It's only you have to follow the law to the T. Just because a white person's beat to death doesn't mean it's less damaging than if a black person's beat to death.
And that's why I think people like you know, the Reverend Al Sharpton are given so much airtime is because they're a very divisive tool. It shouldn't be that, oh, you know, some poor African American got beat to death, or you know, some poor Latino got beat to death, or it should be some American got beat to death.
That's right.
It's us against an out of control government. And I should point out to the listeners that we had David Samuels on in April for the whole show to talk about the racial profiling of African Americans, and particularly about the physical abuse of Latinos by the East Haven Police Department. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, is a huge scandal, and there were a lot of beatings going on there in front of officers, by officers. Some of the officers were threatened that they couldn't report it. Led to Justice Department investigations and the resignation of the police commissioner. So we have been following the story from different sides, but I think as Gus and Marchand are saying, this is an American problem.
Yes. And, of course, you're listening to In Context on WPKN. You can find our website at incontextreport.com. My name is Gus Cantavero, and on the phone, my co-host who's normally here in the studio is Ken McDermott Rowe, and behind the board is Marchand McDermott Rowe. And if you'd like to join the conversation today, you can give us a phone call at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. 9756, or if you'd like to email us, you can drop us a line at ken@mdrtalk.org, ken@mdrtalk.org, and we will relay your message.
And one thing I'd like to point out is, you know, I've traveled a fair amount in the first world and the third world. I mean, I spent a significant amount of time in Egypt. I was married to an Egyptian, and I have to say that what people need to realize is that regardless of race, race is not a factor. Once you start oppressing citizens, once you start giving the police the right to, you know, to behave as they will, to beat without repercussions, to spy without repercussions, because this is federal law enforcement, not just local, to arrest and detain without trial, mm-hmm. to search without warrant. Once you let the dogs loose, as it were, there is no going back. There is very can't suddenly tell the police and the law enforcement agencies, well, hang on, just go after these groups, just go after the Muslims, we don't like them right now, or just go after the Hispanics because there are too many of them right now. No, it affects everyone universally, and it's not too long before you have a totalitarian state like you do in Egypt, where the cops pull you over and they say, oh, that's a nice iPod. Well, listen, if you don't want to get taken to a jail for a very long period of time, you're going to give that to me. And it was very unspoken. I remember being pulled over once in Egypt, and they looked in the car, and they're like, hey, I like that. And either you gave it to them or they carted you off. Now, I flashed around my passport and pretended to be somebody important, and they let me go because they bought it. But the fact is, though, that if I were an Egyptian citizen, I would have had to have given them my iPod.
You actually have less rights.
Let me ask you, Gus and Marshawn, where do these cops get off beating an unprovoked guy to death? Where's the signal coming from? Is it coming from the top? I mean, is it the Fullerton problem, a local problem?
Well,
with our culture here?
I think it's part of the culture of law enforcement, for one. I mean, I think that there are really good cops out there, and I don't want to paint with a broad brush because that is part of what this show is about. It's about combating the terrible stereotypes that the media will portray. And there are good cops out there, but it seems to be that the good cops are being forced out, and that the terrible cops who have this, an agenda of violence, it seems, are the ones who are being promoted. It seems like if you're the kind of cop who will go into the evidence room, take the cocaine, take it out the back door, and then sell it so that you can then go and bust them again, take the cocaine, and then resell it, then you're the cop that's going to become the chief. You know, it seems like they're going after the people who are using their force inappropriately. And they get off on it. You know, they love that you can't fight back, that they can just bow up to you and then chest bump you, and that now it's assaulting an officer.
Well, and to a great extent, I think there is a, you know, top-down phenomena going on, because like I say, you know, it's not all that dissimilar to beating to death Iraqi prisoners
exactly.
in Gitmo or in Bagram or Kandahar.
And if you come back from Iraq as an MP there where you're used to beating people up, you're going to come back here and get preferential treatment to become a police officer. And then you go out, and how do you shut that switch off? How all of a sudden do you become Mr. Nice Guy walking the beat? You know, oh, it's Officer O'Leary. Come on and have some apple pie. Oh, may you make the greatest pie.
I like your Irish accent.
But also, you know, the powers that be, the elites, justify beating, you know, foreigners. So they'll justify having American citizens arrested and beaten. But we have a call, actually.
Okay.
This is Victoria from New Haven. Go ahead, Victoria. You're
Hello,
on the air
Victoria.
At WPKN.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I know some wonderful people in law enforcement, of friends over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I also have been on the receiving end of abuses of power,
mm-hmm.
part of police and other authorities. So I appreciate, you know, the topic and all of your thoughtful comments. This is definitely one of the best shows on the radio, and I thank you for being here week after week to bring us a lot of important stuff.
Thank you very much. We appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, again, thanks to you for doing this. I did want to comment on something I just heard, which had to do with, I thought, a very careless use of the word America or American. And just, we need to keep things in mind when we're talking about the broader perspective and mm-hmm. individual rights and human rights.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's an American citizen, and if by that you mean a U.S. citizen, because America is two continents and a lot of countries,
mm-hmm.
Why would they have special consideration over someone from any other country who happens to be abused? Whether it's in this country or anywhere.
Well, so, police brutality is not justified regardless of citizenship.
Exactly, and that's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
So, you know, when you say, be careful about using the word American,
mm-hmm.
because, first of all, it's incorrect in context.
Okay.
And that's your show, right?
Very clever. Turn it around on us. Nice job.
Context, because there are so many Americas, and all
yes.
are... you know, citizens of the Americas, but also because no citizen of the U.S. should outrank anybody else when it comes to any kind of brutality.
Well, I think what it is when we say American, it's the principle, kind of like the concept of Pax Romana, the concept of being a Roman citizen, is regardless of whether you're, you know, born here, whether you're a naturalized citizen, whether you're a citizen, period, but you're here, you're entitled to certain what are considered American rights, what are considered the American values, which are freedom, liberty. And so whether you're a citizen or not, I think that's what we mean when we say an American, is the idea that, you know, anyone here is entitled to those basic human
yeah.
rights.
I do understand what she's saying, though, and she's correct. We do
yeah,
need to,
I agree.
Yeah,
I'm just clarifying.
Yeah,
we do
need to be specific with what we're saying. And thank you very much for the call, Victoria.
Thank you very much, Victoria.
Thanks, Victoria.
Thanks again for the great show.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
All right, so to clarify, when I say citizen, I mean a U.S. citizen. Apologize if it slips. But to reiterate, your citizenship status should not affect whether it's okay to be beaten. All right, just because you're an illegal immigrant or undocumented worker, as some people like to call it. I think if you've broken if you've come here illegally, you've broken the law. You're committing a crime. You're here illegally. All right, so you're an illegal immigrant.
Well, you know, Marshawn mentioned the problem maybe from the top down, and I think
yes.
there's a point there, because here we have the President of the United States who's authorized essentially murder. They call it
absolutely
killing.
Yes.
I mean, this is totally nuts. This
yeah.
has become, I mean, we know the CIA used to do it, but they did it covertly, and now it's official government policy, and then we also have our president assigned this new National Defense Authorization Act provision, which allows for the indefinite detention,
mm-hmm.
military prisons of people without trial on charges they associate with terrorists.
Yeah, well, what we have is a creeping death. You know, this is like a creeping inch-by-inch corruption that has gone from the top down. And as the slogan goes, a fish rots from the head down. And what we have is a executive branch that has, administration by administration, expanded its executive power to unquestionable, uncheckable lengths. It's now to the point where you cannot even question if the president has committed a crime, because you're un-American if you do, and you're aiding and
aiding and abetting.
Aiding and abetting or comforting the enemy, you know, as Bill O'Reilly would say.
One interesting wrinkle on the NATO summit, which is happening right now, which you were discussing, is it has been designated a national special security event. And as I understand that, that now means that a protester can be arrested
yes.
and charged with a federal crime.
Yes.
For interfering with national security.
And once you start making exceptions to the Constitution, saying, oh, well, you know, your right to free speech applies only under these circumstances, that's a very dangerous road to go
yeah.
down. And we did it with the Patriot Act, but we're doing worse now. People always look at Bush and they say, oh, the Patriot Act, he was bad. That was bad, but this is even worse. I mean, this is saying that in the city of Chicago, because of an event, which is an international event, and NATO is an international organization, we are suspending your inherent American rights because your right to free speech, your right to demonstration, because foreign leaders are
yes.
coming here. So we're suspending your American rights on behalf of foreign governments.
Yeah, they're saying that their agenda supersedes our individual rights. Our Constitution has been suspended temporarily. And if you would like to protest, we have set up some horses down 8 blocks away at the free speech zone. If you'd
That's
like
right.
to protest, you can
the
go all the way down there.
Zone. Don't you love that?
I love the free speech zone.
And this
if
is...
you want to exercise your free speech right, give us a call at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756, and join the conversation here at WPKN's In Context.
But the overall issue, we're talking about Kelly Thomas and the NATO summit and the suppression of free speech and the unlimited authority of the police state. And again, we want to reiterate, this is not a race issue, okay, because... look at Mark Davis, the swine farmer in Michigan. All right, the state came and said, under the lobbying of the pig industry, that you have an invasive species. So we have to kill all of your pigs because they are a different breed of what the typical American swine farmer will raise. So they're trying to put a small farmer out of business just because he is competition for the big business. And then you have Rawson Foods in California. They get raided by armed SWAT team agents from the FDA because they are selling raw food and they are competing with the big business of the agribusiness, the agricultural industrial complex. So we have a completely out of control government that uses the gun as the way to enforce law instead of logic and reason.
And there is this connection, which we constantly remind listeners of, between the war abroad and the suppression of our rights at home. One good example is the use of drones, which is being brought
yes.
back. Congress is encouraging drones to be used within the United States. It's
yes.
using the same technology used by the military in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they recently issued a ruling that local police and fire and civil departments will be able to fly drones weighing up to 25 pounds without applying for special approval. The FAA.
Right, and this completely violates
over your head soon.
And this completely violates your reasonable expectation of privacy. If you put a 12-foot fence in your backyard, this is an example that Judge Napolitano used recently on TV. He said if you have a 12-foot fence and you're laying out sunbathing and someone climbs on a ladder over the fence to take pictures of you, that's a crime. So why is it okay that the police do it?
And there is, you know, people always say we need this to be safer. There is no correlation whatsoever to excessive law enforcement measures and safety. Because in all honesty, you know, taking in the global perspective, right, the global example, countries like Montenegro, where everybody owns a gun, has a very small police force, everybody owns a firearm. And there's no crime.
And Switzerland.
Now, and Switzerland, exactly. Switzerland, everyone serves in the military. Everyone takes home their service weapon. Everybody owns a firearm.
No crime.
But then you compare that to Great Britain, for example. A country just like the U.S., they have cameras on every street corner.
Yeah.
They have police forces that are as well armed as the army is. And crime is higher there than in Montenegro, which was the victim of the collapse of Yugoslavia and the Bosnian War.
And not only that, but Britain has the gall to go and arrest people who try to defend themselves in their own house.
Well, that happens.
Did you hear that case where that one woman had a baby upstairs sleeping? She was home alone. Two guys came to the front door to try to break in. She gets a steak knife and she brandishes it through the front window. They turn around and leave because they don't want to be bothered with fighting a woman who has some spunk. She calls the cops. The cops show up. She tells them the story, and they stand there debating for 10 minutes on whether they have to arrest her for brandishing a deadly weapon.
And there's it's similar to in the U.S. with there are numerous cases, but intruder breaks into the home. Young mother is home with her children, and you know an intruder breaks in. Now this intruder, it could be a gang member, it could be on drugs. Nobody knows. This guy's dangerous. She's home alone. She calls the police, and she's like, "Can I shoot him? Can I shoot him?" This shouldn't even be a question. Somebody breaks into your home.
Shoot him.
You're a woman. You're home alone. Shoot him. Put two in his chest. You know what? You'll be doing a service to humanity. You know.
I mean, the idea though that we have to be so disarmed and cowardly is what the police state thrives on. They want people to be so afraid to protect themselves that they are unwilling to ever question the government's authority.
Well, that's just it. It's the idea of professionalism. And you have the same thing when you have natural disasters or things like that in the U.S. People are afraid to act because they say, well, it's the job of the professional to do this. You know, if somebody goes in and breaks into your neighbor's house and they're murdering your neighbor, and let's say, you know, you're home, you might be able to do something. You say, well, I don't want to get involved because if I get involved, they could get in trouble.
Right.
So, you know, I have to wait for the professionals. So it creates an entirely docile population. But it's something that was the dream of authoritarian rulers all over the world, like Stalin and Hitler.
And Marcia, along those lines, now there is a new amendment in Congress that would legalize the use of propaganda on American audiences.
And oh, really?
There has been since 1948 a ban on the government, the CIA, FBI, propagandizing us and using misinformation. To
yeah, right. Like it doesn't already happen.
That
yeah, and what you know what's funny about that is that just the mere proposal of that kind of makes people think like, oh, then I guess everything I hear is true.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because it's like they don't do that to us already.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's so ridiculous. The CIA already has representatives in every single major news organization that approves
so
all
true.
The stories.
But this would be clever, though, because it would make it official.
In the Pentagon, they could actually have a physical office with a nameplate on the door saying, this is our office for...
Office of Propaganda.
Office of Propaganda, yeah.
and it would give them an excuse to start shutting people down who don't follow the propaganda line.
Yeah, and just like the fairness doctrine that's proposed, I know that the news media is really awful and reprehensible, but the fairness doctrine would just make it worse because now people who are disagreeing like us, we would be forced to show both sides of the story and allow for...
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things you mentioned that Gus, is sometimes people say, well, why don't you say the other side of the story?
Because it's crap.
9/11, and we say, well, in the corporate media, you only get the other side.
I know.
Of the story. 3%, 1%, perhaps. So we're trying to get that, the alternative view out to the public.
And to give a good comparison, you know, they always say, well, you have to give the other side of the story. Well, then in Holocaust documentaries, do they now have to give the Nazi side of the story? They have to say, we grant you that, what the Nazis did was wrong. But from their perspective, the Jews owned all the banks. I mean, you know, it's like there is a limit with reasonability when you're giving the story. You want to give the truth.
You know, we only have 7 minutes, 6 or 7 minutes left of the show. So if listeners want to get in a comment or ask a question, give us a ring now at 203-336-9756 and enjoy the conversation on WPKN's In Context.
Yeah, and also I want to go back to talking about how this isn't a racial issue of white versus black or Hispanic or Asian, that the police state doesn't care what race you are. The police state just wants to squelch any opposition. And if you look at, if you go Google Department of Homeland Security tripwire, you'll come up with, I think, something like 28 documents that were circulated to all the different categories of shop owners in the country describing a white domestic extremist, basically just somebody who wears blue jeans and has a tractor hat on or something like that. And,
yeah.
You know, they're describing people with chemical burns on their hands, and that's, you know, basically every farmer, or someone who maybe lost the tip of a finger, which is any machinist or anybody who's ever worked with their hands, you know, getting something caught in a combine. You know, they're describing basic average Americans, and they keep it so broad. And this is for cafe owners, you know, someone who wants to pay with cash, you know.
It's about making us frightened of each other.
Of everybody.
Exactly.
So if one person just exhibits one of these behaviors, all of a sudden you now have to suspect that this guy might be a terrorist just because he wants to tell you about the other side of the story.
Well, and you know,
I want to just mention, while this is such a downer, on a positive note, last Wednesday, federal judge Catherine Forrest of the Southern District of New York struck down the NDAA's provision authorizing voluntary detention of U.S. citizens, saying that it violated the First Amendment rights of people because it would intimidate them.
Well,
so we'll see if that's sustained on appeal, but that was certainly encouraging.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, to be honest, you know, the whole notion that we have to be frightened of everything everyone does, is absolutely ludicrous. I mean, I remember, I spent some time living in Ireland in the 90s, and I remember being there during the Oma bombing in Northern Ireland. And, you know, I remember there was just this air of, you know, I guess fatalism. Because you knew all the terrorists, they were Irish. They looked like you. They walked and talked like you. So you knew there was really, unless they did something stupid, like left a bomb sitting in the street, there was really no way to spot them. So you just went on with your life. Mm-hmm. Whereas now they're trying to create all this phony
hysteria.
Hints. Hysteria, exactly. They're phony hints. Because in reality, talk to any soldier who's been overseas, and they will tell you, you can't spot the suicide bomber. You can't spot the terrorist. You don't know they're there until it goes off, because they're not stupid.
Yeah, but this is why the military and the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI are training to take on the American people, because they are, from their own internal documents, they're training for a Greece-style collapse. So if we have an economic collapse here, they're expecting complete breakdown of society, and they're going to roll out all the barriers, they're going to shut down all the free speech zones and all the protests, and anybody out there who wants to be an activist and speak up for their rights, you can forget about it.
Maybe we can go into that in some detail next Monday when we have our monthly war report, where Marshawn, as our military affairs commentator, focuses on important and analysis of important military news.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Well, and, you know, I think a very important note is also that their Homeland Security is training. In their operations, there's a great article in the New York Times on this. They're training to take down veterans, angry war veterans.
Yeah.
Because who are the most dangerous people when you have, you know, fear of a revolution or an economic collapse? It's the people who've seen war, the people who've come home, and the people who remember that their oath of allegiance was to the Constitution.
Yeah, which is what they're most afraid of. They want to get rid of the people who actually want to uphold the Constitution, which is why good police officers are being pushed out of the force, why good soldiers who question the missions that they're going on or the illegal orders that they're being given for torture are being pushed out of the service, or they're being just relegated to, you know, on base, you know, paper pushing or, you know, wrench tightening. They don't want them out on patrols actually getting promoted and questioning authority. Well, I think we have, what do we have, 2 minutes left?
Yeah, I think about 2 minutes.
Okay.
Well, a minute and 30 seconds to
All
be
right.
exact.
Well, I think it's a little late to ask for any more phone calls, but yeah, next week is going to be our war report, and Marshawn is going to break down a lot of the stuff in more in depth of the conflicts going around the world. You can find us online at incontextreport.com. You can find us on Facebook and like us and get our updates. You can find us on YouTube, where I think we may be getting back into producing our weekly videos soon. We took a little hiatus from that. YouTube.com/incontextreport is that address. And Ken, you have anything you want to add?
No, just I encourage people to tune in next week when we the 28th, Monday at noon, we'll do the war report, and you'll hear a lot of information about important military developments that aren't being covered in the corporate media.
Yeah, and I'm going to be hopefully I'll have some more information to be able to talk about the NATO summit that's happening,
yeah,
and the latest U.S. plans and efforts to topple the governments of Syria, Lebanon, and Iran. All our usual fun shenanigans.
Oh, I guess I forgot to mention that the Kelly Thomas story, the officer Manuel Ramos, is going to stand trial for second-degree murder. So that is a positive development there, where at least some justice may come out of this case. And I know that the police department did settle with the family for $1 million, but that, in a civil litigation. But the but still, you know, the fact that they tried to push it off for a year and just brush it under the rug is evidence that there's just absolutely no accountability out there. All right, so I guess that does it for today. And we will see you again next week. I'm Gus Canavero for Ken.
Ken Victor Barreau.
And Marshawn, this is In Context, and we'll see you again next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care, everyone.
Let the seed in our home and